Hello, and welcome to another episode of Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real-World Perspectives. My name is Diana Isaacs, and I am joined with Natalie Bellini. And in this episode, we want to talk about using insulin pumps, specifically automated insulin delivery, in primary care settings outside of endocrinology. And where this is coming from is there was recently an article published in Clinical Diabetes that's called Assessing the iLet Bionic Pancreas Deployed in Primary Care and Via Telehealth, a Randomized Clinical Trial. And in this trial, they did indeed compare primary care starting someone on a pump with endocrinology. So, Natalie, you want to take it away?
Absolutely. So, first of all, I'd love to acknowledge our very good friends and colleagues, Sean Oger as the primary author and Tamara Oger as the guidance of all things this research happened, right? Because they are practicing in Colorado, they are practicing primary care, and they believe in insulin pump therapy. And interestingly, in Colorado, we think of a couple of pretty famous diabetes centers that exist there. But in between there and out in the middle of nowhere in Colorado, there is no access to endocrine care for a lot of people. So they really have believed in, how do we do this in primary care? How do we get primary care providers to feel comfortable with insulin pumps? Because a lot of primary care providers say, oh, good, you're seeing endo, check the box. What was your last A1C, right? And don't really dive into the diabetes because it's just done by someone else. But if there isn't someone else, how do we address that? So this is where this came from is, does this system work a little bit differently? And is the differences in the way this system work? Can we improve outcomes in people that might not actually have access to an endocrinologist at all? So I think knowing the background helps set the stage for this study. So, so let's talk a little bit about it. So the study design, this was an open label, random order crossover trial compared the bionic pancreas use with what we call usual care over 4 weeks. So 2 weeks in each arm in adults with type 1 diabetes. Two sites enrolled the participants and conducted study procedures, which was either a primary care site with no prior clinical or research experience with the bionic pancreas, and in an endocrine site center with extensive clinical and research experience with AID. So I think that's really interesting. They didn't pick themselves. So Doctors Ogers, both of them, have lots of insulin pump experience. So comparing them to the typical primary care wasn't going to work, right? They needed to find primary care that didn't know anything about insulin pumps or AID in order to make this work. So I think they did a really great job of designing this study to really get to the ground of what we would have in usual care. So half of each site's participants completed everything, device training, all of it, via telehealth. Okay. And then the other half did it live like we typically do. We do some video starts. We don't, but a lot of ours are still face to face. So the participants had no restrictions on diet, exercise, activity. They didn't have to do anything but start this. So there were eligible people. They looked at 18 to 85 years. I love that. They recruited a huge range, is probably as big as we would put someone on a new pump start. And had to have been taking insulin for at least a year and had to have an A1C of less than 11. Again, I always credit the people at Beta Bionics. A lot of other insulin pump studies, they want like less than 9.5, less than, you know, is typical. Some people will do less than 10, but Beta Bionics always goes a little bit up, a little bit more, pushing that gamut because we do have these people. I live in Cleveland, Ohio, and I have people with A1Cs greater than 11, right? So I love that they looked hard to find people out of what we would want to have happen, because that's a risk, isn't it? So they wanted a GFR greater than 30, and they needed to be on MDI already, with or without CGM. And they needed to be insulin pump naive for at least 3 years or never used for at least a year. So they could have been on years ago, but they couldn't have been on one recently is basically the way it worked. So primary care recruited 20 people and 10 were trained in person, 10 were randomized to be trained by telehealth. And for 14 days, those people got usual care or the bionic pancreas in the in-person group, and the same with the telehealth. So of those 10, half got usual care, half got bionic pancreas, and then they flipped them. And then the same with the endocrinology group. 10 people were trained in person, 10 people were trained by telehealth, and they got, some got usual care, some got the bionic pancreas, and they flipped. So that's the design of the study. So Diana, do you want to talk a little bit about our outcomes?
Yeah. So, I mean, bottom line was that the outcomes in endocrinology and primary care were very, very similar. When they looked at things like the percentage, they looked actually at the percentage of time they looked at a few different things. So they looked at the time in range, right? The time spent between 70 and 180. But they also looked at average glucose that was less than 154, really implying that it'd be a less than 7% A1C, and then also less than 183, which would be very similar to a less than 8% A1C, basically. And in terms of results of what they saw, so 97% of the total people involved had an average glucose less than 183, 64% achieved an average glucose of less than 154. And what I think the key takeaway was that whether it was in primary care or endocrinology, it was very similar, really indicating that these pumps could be started in primary care. They don't need specialized care to start them. And I think this is really important because we don't have enough endocrinologists, especially in certain locations. There's just not one for miles and miles and miles. And so a lot of people with type 1 diabetes are seeing primary care. And our guidelines now say that we should be offering automated insulin delivery systems as a first line. Like, that should be first line for people with type 1 diabetes and should really be offered for people with type 2 on mealtime insulin. And that, unfortunately, is not always happening. And one of the barriers to access is someone's just not, they're not seeing endocrinology. They may not have a diabetes care and education specialist near them. And so they're not being offered the technology. And I also just want to back up because I think also one of the unique things with the iLet and probably why they chose to use that pump for this trial is that it is designed to be a much simpler startup process. So it is, there are no calculating those basal rates and those bolus, like the carb ratios and the correction factors and programming the insulin action time. Like, you don't need to do any of that. All you need to do is make sure the person is connected to CGM and you need to have their weight. And that is it. The pump figures out how much insulin the person needs. And so that is exciting to see that you were able to show that in this trial.
You're right. And I think the first time I had a bionic pancreas in my hand and they're like, okay, let's simulate this start, right? So put this in. Okay, how much do you weigh? Okay, here we go. And they're like, okay, so I was already connected to the sensor, right? Okay, now push go bionic. I'm like, okay, then what though? And they said, well, then put it in your pocket or on your belt or tuck it in your bra. We don't know. What do you mean then what? This is it, right? So it's very, very different than starting. There are no carb ratios. Now you do, I mean, it's best, it operates best if you announce your meals, which you do regular meal, less than, you know, usual meal, it's really called usual, and then less than usual or more than usual, right? So what are you eating? And some of the guidance on how do you do well on this product or like to get the system to know you very quickly because it learns you, right? The algorithm is a smart algorithm. It's making decisions and it's learning from your past history is eating usual meals for the first week and trying to space them out like breakfast, lunch, dinner, as opposed to three meals at four. You know, some people get home from work and they eat at 5, 6, and 7, right? And then they have a cookie and milk before they go to bed. The system doesn't like that. Not in the beginning. It can get used to it. But the first week, really, if you do that, we've found with the people that we have started on it have made huge differences in their outcomes early on. But I'll tell you, these people were told, do anything you want, right? They put no holds on them whatsoever. They just said, here's the pump. This is what we'd like you to do. Go. And this is the data. And I love that they compared it to endo because right now we think insulin pumps should go to endo. And this really is about, well, maybe not. Maybe we can with even just a tiny bit of education because these primary care had none. They had no exposure, right? They purposely picked people who had no exposure. So I'm impressed. The biggest challenge with the study I have is it's you know, it's the first study. We have to see how things go, right? We have to get our feet wet. There's the numbers are low. That's the biggest thing, right? And so when we only have 40 patients, that's the only, if I had to pick out one thing, because you always have to pick out positives and negatives and what can we do and how do we change things? That's my biggest thing is I want it more and I hope they're doing more of them.
Yeah, I mean, right. There's 40. But I want to actually just point out a couple of the other time and range metrics that were changed. So in the primary care group, because remember, this was a crossover, right? So they did 2 weeks of their usual care and then compared it to 2 weeks on the islet. So in that way, they were kind of acting like their own control. And so in the primary care group, they actually went from 63.7% time in range 70 to 180 to 77.5%. So that's, I mean, then that was a statistically significant difference. And then the endocrinology group actually went from 61.5% in range to 68.8%. So interestingly, they were a little lower in both groups, but both groups had improvements, which was great to see. And when they combined all of them together, it went from 62.8 on average to 73.5. So,
and that's a big deal because every 5% improves, right? Reduces risk of complications. So that's really, you know, so we talk about it like 62 to 73. And is that really? No, that's a really big deal. Right. And that it tends to be you get to that 62, 64, and it's really tough to get to that next 10 or 8% increase. And they did it. Right. And they did it very quickly. So that's impressive.
Right. Especially, well, again, it's also interesting because a lot of the endocrine patients were actually on insulin pumps for their usual care versus the primary care was on MDI. But I think the other thing is, like, in addition to, right, it was 40 people, they were on the system for 2 weeks. So we certainly don't know. We'd like to think that would continue if they had measured the 12 weeks or beyond. It would continue, but we just can't say because it wasn't measured that long. The other thing that I would love, so this was done in type 1 diabetes, which is the indication the pump is approved for right now. But wouldn't it be nice to see how this would perform in type 2 diabetes? Because there's a lot of people with type 2 on MDI, and that would really be like, that could make a really, really big difference. So I hope for that. And then just the other thing I'll call out is that overall, I was kind of surprised to see like the baseline A1Cs, even though they could go higher up. On average, it was like around 7%. So that tells me, okay, like this is probably like a decently engaged population. So I'd love to see how this, you know, how things would go in kind of more diverse populations. But that's where you get those, when you get bigger sample sizes, you usually can get more diversity with the population. Mm-hmm. But likely this is going to be the first of more studies. Also, I think gaining some real world evidence in this area will be very helpful too. Because I suspect that there are places, you know, across the country, there are primary care settings that are starting patients on these pumps because they're not going to wait for endocrinology. If there's no endocrinologist there, right, there are people that are learning and they want to help their patients, right? And I think collecting those outcomes and learning from that and seeing how things are going will be really, really valuable. And probably there will be real world evidence too for that type 2 population too as we try to gain more randomized control trial data.
Absolutely. It's exciting.
It is very exciting. Now, I think the other question is, this is the islet, which is, I would argue, probably the easiest pump to start because of the not needing any of the settings. So how would this work with other pumps where generally you need more settings? Although I could see a way in which maybe somebody, you know, maybe you've got an educator, you've got somebody that can be virtual that can take a look at the person's dosing and stuff and figure out settings to start with that can help and then, you know, get someone started on it. And then it would just be tweaking. I still think there's probably other models that can work, but ultimately we want choice for our patients. So I would hope that we can find a way to be able to start multiple pumps in primary care or places where they don't have endocrinologists. One other plug I'll put out there too, because Natalie, I know we've been talking with the ACD, the American College of Diabetology, and that's an organization that also recognizes the shortage of endocrinologists and is actively trying to do something about it. And so their solution is to try to train essentially more primary care physicians to be diabetologists. And so instead of doing kind of the endocrinology fellowship, which anyway, endocrinology encompasses a lot of other conditions, disease states outside of diabetes, they are focused just on diabetes, 1 year intensive fellowship. And then like being able to really help the specializing in diabetes and being able to do pumps, being able to do all these things we typically think of as more advanced level care in diabetes. So I think that's great. And I know that they're also talking with other disciplines like the nurse practitioners, like the pharmacists, to see what can we do to get everyone comfortable so we can take care of the over 14% of adults that now live with diabetes.
No, I think, you know, we are not going to answer this problem with backfilling endocrinologists. There's just not going to be enough of them in for the rest of our careers for you and I, right? We know the numbers. It's not good. So this group of clinicians, led by a good friend and colleague of ours, actually, Dr. Tu, is adamant that we can do this, is adamant that we can make this its own subspecialty. And we know there are a lot of primary care providers out there who have decided to specialize in diabetes already. But how do we recognize them? How do we help people with diabetes find these people so that they can access care and hopefully open up slots for people that need it? And, you know, I mean, I know if you call my office right now, I'm a 6 month plus wait, and I'm a nurse practitioner at an endo office, right? So we're, and it's like that across the United States. You know, it's a real struggle. So I think what we need to remember is that this is a solution, and with a fellowship, we can do that training. People can gain that training, and they're looking at how would we certify them and what would we do, and making sure that there's, you know, a support system in place so that these clinicians can, you know, follow. You know, I only see diabetes now. I used to see all kinds of other endocrine issues, and that's my love, and that's what I want to do, right? Well, there should be other people that can do that and don't have to operate under an endocrine arm. They could operate in a primary care or in a, you know, their own facility of whatever that would look like, and take amazing care of people. So I'm excited.
Yeah, I think it's needed, because with this many people living with diabetes, we really need more hands on deck and more people with specialized knowledge on how to do that. So, all right. Well, this has been a great discussion. At least, you know, we learned about one approach that we could be seeing more pumps in primary care. So thank you so much, Natalie, for the great discussion. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. And that wraps up this episode of Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real World Perspectives.